The bartender slid me a beer and I took it gratefully, holding the cold pint glass against my cheekbone. The song ended and a clash of bar sounds filled its void. Ice shaking in tin, shuffleboard pucks clacking. A couple seated at the bar hollering in dismay at a TV suspended above the bartender's head. Joe ordered a drink and began pulling crumpled bills from his jeans pocket. I was about to walk back to my booth when Sarah Smile by Hall & Oates began to play, and he let out a moan. What a perfect song. His hands shot into the tall, dark pile of curls atop his head, then clawed its way down his cheek as he listened. Hall & Oates. I loved Hall & Oates. They were a rare jukebox selection for the time, a band whose 80s sound was seen as cheesy by most people I knew, too recent to be recycled, though that wouldn't last much longer. I leaned against the bar next to him and listened to the gorgeous, sultry first verse. Actually, I said, unable to stop myself, I would call this a perfect track, a perfect recording, not a perfect song. I could tell he already halfway understood, but I explained anyway, with a level of detail befitting an idea of far greater complexity. A perfect song has stronger bones, lyrics, chords, melody. It can be played differently, produced differently, and it will almost always be great. Take Both Sides now, if you'll excuse me being that girl in a bar talking about Joni Mitchell. Any singer who doesn't completely suck can cover that song and you'll be drowning in goosebumps, right? It was a leap of faith that he'd even know the song, but he gave a swift nod. Totally. I ducked to avoid being swallowed by the armpit of a tall guy receiving a drink from the bartender. Joe's eyes stayed on me, focused like spotlights, so I kept going. Now, Sarah Smile, can you imagine anyone besides Daryl Hall singing this, exactly as he sang it on this particular day? Joe cocked his ear. Daryl Hall responded with a long, elegant riff. I jabbed my finger in the air, tracing the melody. See? The most beautiful part of the verse is just him riffing. A great song, and I'm talking about the pop rock world here, obviously, can be improved by riffing, or ruined by riffing. But it cannot rely on riffing. Joe didn't look smug or bored, which were the reactions these kinds of tangents had historically won me. He didn't give me a lecture about relativism while air quoting the phrase, good music. He just lifted his bottle of Budweiser, paused it at his lips, and took a drink. The tall guy beside us smacked his shoulder and Joe's eyes lit up with recognition, so it seemed we were done. But before I could leave, he turned back. What's your name again? He squinted at me rather severely, like I was a splinter he was trying to tweeze. Percy, I said. Bye. I walked back to the booth where my roommate and her boyfriend were planning a party I didn't want to have. Finally, Megan said as I scooted in across from them on the honeywood bench. Do you think one of those jugs of Sky is enough? Plus mixers and a keg? She showed me a post-it inserted into her day planner. That would be 50 each, unless the mixer is Red Bull. Megan was an art history major, but seemed happiest when doing simple math. I tolerated her orderliness by indulging in small acts of rebellion. Unscrewed toothpaste lids, late phone bill payments, all calibrated to satisfy an inner urge for chaos without disrupting our friendship. Which was important to me, if only for its rarity, like an ugly diamond. I told Trent what we discussed about not inviting the whole world, she said as she took a sip of her cosmopolitan, casting a significant look at the boyfriend. Poor Trent. I had expected them to be broken up by now. Is Joey Morrow coming? Trent said to me, with one eye on Megan. When I shrugged, he pushed. You were talking to him at the bar, right? He's in my econ. Megan twisted to peer out of the booth. Oh, him. Joey and Zoe, who both like Bowie. Yeah, they're cool. I knew this, that he had a girlfriend. I watched him across the bar and thought of a rom-com I'd seen at an unfortunately impressionable age in which a man says, gazing longingly at the female lead, a girl like that is born with a boyfriend.